gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, during the work week. And we're going to have a fantastic show. Yesterday, need to apologize to everyone. We had some technical difficulties. Blog Talk Radio as a platform was down during our showtime. So our scheduled guest, Will Staney, did not get to come on the show, but we're going to record an episode with him and replay it later. So we'll get all of Will's brains out, which is awesome, but we'll just have to kind of render that in a different way. But apologies to anyone that listened live yesterday because there was no show. Couldn't get it on. But today we're marching on. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do two things. We're going to march on, and we're not going to talk weather. We're absolutely not going to talk weather because it turns out it's horrible somewhere in the world today, right now. So without any further ado, Andrew, would you do us a favor and give us a quick introduction to yourself?
Yeah, hi everybody. This is Andrew Pearson. I'm the CEO with CloudPay. We're a global payroll vendor. We are a global company. We have offices in all continents and every location, serving multinational organizations and their payroll needs. I'm sure we'll talk a little more about that. So you're right, the weather is bad somewhere, and it's been bad in where I come from, which is the United Kingdom, and it was great to hear that you used some British music to intro the show there. I appreciated that. But as you say, nothing to talk about the weather except maybe some stuff about cloud.
Absolutely. Do us a favor. What is top of mind for you these days with your clients? You interact with prospects and you interact with clients every single day. What's going on in their worlds? What's top of mind for them? What's keeping them up at night?
Yeah, I think that that evolves over time. I mean, there's some fundamental things that we've seen consistently over the prior years, which are still top of mind for people. And then there are some new things, as there generally are as the world turns. The fundamentals, though, are still the same. People have increasingly complex organizations that have grown up through a mix of organic and M&A-based activity as they've grown a multinational organization. It's wider and deeper than it ever was, and they need to do a better job at controlling that organization, ensuring that they remain compliant around the world, and doing that in an efficient and effective way. And that remains top of mind for our customers who are helping that with, and our newer prospects who are talking to and will be helping them with in the period ahead here. And that isn't going to change, I think. The payroll environment that we're working in at a global level is fundamentally an early stage environment. Not that many people have consolidated their payroll into the single platform approaches that are new in the market, such as the one that we have. And they're looking for those issues that are top of mind to be resolved by doing so. And there's many companies out there that haven't yet stepped onto this this approach. And I guess the best proof point I can give everyone around that is that we're, as a company, spending relatively small amounts of money on marketing, and yet we grew 40% last year over the prior year, and we expect that growth rate to go up this year to 50 to 60%. So that's just a sign that people want to solve the problem. And that's common. Some things that are new that I'm seeing, one particularly interesting thing is that there was a time in our world where people worried a great deal about data location, data security, data privacy, and we had to have a fairly extensive set of discussions with our clients and new clients particularly about what that really meant, where our data resided and what the controls were that we had around it. And that kind of went away over the last two or three years. I wouldn't say that it went down to the level of table stakes, but it certainly became a kind of tick box discussion. Tell us what you do, that's fine. But with the emergence of a lot of the controversy around data privacy, centered around some things that have nothing to do, of course, with payroll, Edward Snowden being the classic example, that agenda has come back, and a lot of nervousness, I guess, has come back into play around data privacy in general. And so that's something that was top of mind, went away a little bit, but because of the geopolitical environment that's changed in the last 12 months or so, has come back up to be top of mind in some of our newer prospects that we're talking to for business this year.
The treatment of data, I'm just assuming it's different all around the world, and because you've traveled all around the world, your clients are global clients. How is the just data privacy, how is the treatment of that different from the UK to the US or Japan to the UK? Like, how is it different around the world from your perspective?
Yeah, there's a surprising amount of commonality around the world, actually. I mean, you can think ultimately of the European Union as being a bloc in this context. There are some nuances and some differences. You know, for example, there are several more stringent elements to the data privacy that exist in Germany that don't exist elsewhere in the European Union. But broadly speaking, it can be considered largely a bloc with a couple of exceptions. And then around the world, there is different attitudinal approaches to it. But the fundamental aspects remain really quite common. And it's also a topic that I would say is a very emotional topic. You know, the legal environment, you know, can be described and understood, and it may differ. But as I said, there's also a lot of commonality. The legal environment that we exist in, where we're making certain commitments to our customers, which are legally binding in the contracts we sign with those customers, obviously reflect the legal environments of the countries or blocks of countries that we're working in. But fundamentally, you know, we're making those provisions in our contracts with our customers, and then we have to live up to those. We have to take care of the data fundamentally. And where I say it gets emotional, is really through ignorance, and I mean ignorance in the true sense of the word. People don't know enough about what is, at the end of the day, a complex area with a lot of detail and a lot of technical legal aspects to it. People don't know, and typically those people want to find out, and so we end up in an education process which gets people to the right place where they're comfortable that we are the custodians of their obviously very sensitive data, and we obviously have the legal provisions in our contract around that, and they have the recourse to us that comes out of those provisions. So it's one of those topics that is driven by, you know, what happens in the world. As I said, it changed recently for the reasons I stated. But fundamentally, it is one of those classic situations whereby only a small number of people are specialists in the area, and yet it is important for everybody, and therefore there's an education process to be gone through to help people understand the realities of what we're doing for them and the fact that it's safe.
For a lot of folks that listen to the call, they might not have ever walked down the road of global peril. So let's do that for them. They wake up one morning, their company is going to acquire a global company. They're going to sit on 5,000 new employees that are now parked all around the world, and this is new. When you look at the global payroll market, it's actually not there's different delivery models. There's different types of approaches. Tell us a broad swath of, there's a few different ways to do this. Here's why we've made our bet. Here's how we do it, et cetera.
Yeah, as I said earlier, it's a relatively young environment. Let me give you some data points around that. You know, there are 30,000 companies on the planet with 1,000 or more employees located in 10 or more countries. And that's essentially the market we serve. It's obviously a subset of the overall commercial environment that the payroll industry serves, either with software or outsourced solutions of varying different mixes and modes. But that's our sector, that's what we look at, and that's what I mean when I say multinational corporation. It has to have that minimum kind of scale and scope. And within that organization, those organizations, you know, for the vast majority of them have not, as I said earlier, done anything around, you know, seeking to unify or consolidate their payroll either through a common vendor or a common set of approaches across a number of vendors. They're really existing in what I always call a fragmented state right now, and that is they do payroll in a different way for each different country, and if they've grown up through M&A or through some other mechanisms of corporate development, you know, they may well be doing payroll four or five or six different ways inside a single country because of the history of the organization. So you're really dealing with a very fragmented set of mechanisms, which is very unwieldy. You don't have full control. You don't have assurance of compliance. You're probably spending too much money doing on it, and you don't have any visibility as to what's going on. You can't, for example, get a headcount report, which is covering many territories or even the holy grail of an accurate, up-to-date global headcount report. It's not available to you, and those are the kinds of day-to-day problems that you're dealing with, and they fall, you know, fairly firmly into the category of financial challenges, right? You're talking about financial control, you're talking about compliance, you're talking about risk, and you're talking about cost, spending too much money to stay in the same place. And this fits, I think, into an overall agenda you see in these multinationals of what I might call simplification of their business. Many of these organizations have become highly complex, both in systems, processes. They've grown through M&A, as I said, and they've reached this state of, I won't call it stasis, but certainly, momentum is not good in terms of these organizations, and they need to try and pick up the pace in an increasingly competitive world and be more reactive and responsive, and their sheer internal complexity is preventing them from doing so. And this can be, I think, applied across many domains, and payroll is just one of them, and obviously that's the domain that we exist in. So when you think about doing something about that, particularly in the payroll context, you have a number of different options, but right now you don't have a large number of options, which I guess is another reason why we as a company are doing so well. The scaled vendors, the names we all know, they have a lot of different operations on a country-by-country basis. They themselves grew up, I think, in a large part through M&A. So in many ways, those large vendors that are well known in the space have kind of internalized the fragmented nature of the marketplace inside themselves. So when you try and consolidate your payroll working with one of those very large vendors, you end up with a different approach country by country by country, and it isn't really very different to having different vendors across all those countries, at least conceptually. And I think, again, that's another reason why we have a different model, of course, based on a single SaaS platform and a common set of standard services right across the globe. We're having a significant and strong period of growth in the company right now because of that. And then you've got another choice to make, of course, which is to whether to do it yourself or whether to ask somebody else to do it. And at a general level, at the highest level, the industry is trending towards the latter, which is to ask someone else to do it. I'm using English words rather than jargon like managed services or bureau or outsourcing, because those words, in my experience, tend to be used slightly differently by vendors and practitioners right across the world. But fundamentally, there is a trend in it not being done internally and it being done by somebody else externally. And the data from Gartner and Forrester and others clearly supports that over the medium to long term. And we're participating in that trend too. And I think what makes us unique in this space is that we have a common technology platform across the planet for global payroll services provision, and we have a common service model too. And we only are focused absolutely on this one thing, which is payroll, whereas many other players in our environment are focused maybe just on outsourcing, using lots of different technologies and service models across lots of different areas. They'll do payroll, they'll do recruitment, they'll do other things as well. And we're not doing that. We're absolutely laser focused on this one problem of solving how organizations get their people paid in an efficient, compliant, and risk-free manner around the world. And the way to think about our business, if you will, just to finish talking about us for a second, is we're a technology-enabled services business. So we're there to do your payroll for you, but we use a lot of technology to do it, and that allows us to be more efficient and more effective and provide greater value to our clients than I think our competitors are able to do.
I want you to debunk a myth that we have here in the U.S. around when to outsource and when to insource. And I think most HR pros would probably tell you, or at least offline, they'd tell you that at a certain size, let's say, or maybe it's a certain complexity, that they should insource payroll. That there's a pressure either from themselves or their peers or the CFO, but there's a pressure to insource. So first of all, that's just a myth that kind of runs through our industry. What's your experience with when to insource, when to outsource, et cetera?
Yeah, I think as a company that's fundamentally, pitching up at someone's door and asking to do it for them, it's pretty clear what we believe. And I don't see any reason why, literally everything, shouldn't be outsourced to the people in a payroll context. So the people can concentrate on their own business. Unless you want to be a payroll company and be a company like ours, you have no reason to build competence and skill and knowledge in that domain. It's not your business. And I think that fundamental driver is behind this slow, gradual, over many decades trend towards people not doing it themselves. And I think really all you're seeing is, the accumulated experience of certain organizations and individuals inside those that have not done it that way, certainly for their bigger countries, and they've been responsible for it themselves. And you know, as new HR leaders and finance leaders, and it's both really in the context of payroll, when you think about it, come to the fore and grow their careers. And we see people, you know, I see people that I grew up with in the industry, you know, taking on more senior roles, and this trend just continues. So I think payroll doesn't move quickly. It is not social media. But if we were to, you know, have this discussion in 20 years' time, you know, that organization that has 30,000 people in the U.S. is doing payroll themselves, I think you will see that they will have taken it outside by the time we get to that kind of time frame in the future. It will happen.
So you mentioned compliance a couple times. So on the other end of that, you've probably seen or heard a lot of horror stories. So if you can, generic horror stories, you know, I don't want you to give away anyone's names or anything like that, but just things that you've seen that would blindside HR pros as kind of compliance-related horror stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number. I certainly do have some horror stories, and, you know, they're generally shared over dinner after we've got to know a customer for a few years, because they're so difficult for them to share until trust is complete and absolute. We've served them for a period of time. But there's a number of categories to look at, I think, and some I guess hints at what horror stories might be inside them as we go through. I mean, the obvious one is global level compliance, or at least regional level compliance. It's things like Sarbanes-Oxley, Basel II here in the European environment, where I happen to be right now. And yes, our customers have a concern around that, and certainly they have commitments around that. But in many ways, that's a process, and it needs to be put in place, and it needs to change from time to time as those regulations alter. And it isn't really the source of any horror stories, at least from a payroll perspective. It might be the source of horror stories for the corporation, from a revenue recognition perspective, or other areas which are more core to what their businesses, by which I mean how they derive their revenues and so on, in their marketplaces. But those things tend to, you know, to drive a requirement for consistency, for standardization, for visibility, and that therefore, you know, drives people to wanting technology-based solutions to that, and then that drives them to us. So that's a reason why compliance is important. Where do you think you see the kind of horror stories come in the more local areas of compliance? You know, here in the UK, where, as I said, I'm right now, even though, you know, we're a global company, I spend a lot of my time on a plane, and I happen to be here in the UK right now. You know, if you as a company are late remitting the taxes that by law you're supposed to, and in fact do, you know, hold back from your employees, and you pay them directly to the government, if you're late doing that for a few months here in the UK, you'll get some letters, and ultimately you'll get a fine if you're very late. But it's not really a very onerous and difficult process, certainly if you're a month or two late. There are other countries where if you're a day late, you know, you have a fine, and it's like a source of revenue for the government, and so there's a real fiscal cost to being late on remitting those taxes you've withheld from employees, and so people want to avoid that. There's also reputational aspects, particularly in Asian areas, to do with that too. You know, nobody wants to work for an employer who's known to be not doing these things on time and getting fines and stuff. Is something that is top of mind for in certain countries, you know, in the Asian environment, just as an example. So those things are very real, and HR people do need to worry about those, particularly the reputational aspects, of course, because the soft side of an organization's culture can be impacted by that, and that leads to not a good place if it persists. So compliance has an impact on staff morale in certain environments, and that needs to be understood by HR professionals who are active in those particular countries. And then the most, I guess, sensitive one that does lead to the real horror stories, which do come out over dinner eventually with our clients, are to do with those situations where, you know, people are internally defrauding an organization, a company. You know, if you have your local country manager in country X, you know, having responsibility for 100 employees in that country, and he's the country manager and he's running the business and he's organizing the payroll, you know, we've seen certain situations where, you know, there isn't actually 100 employees in that organization doing any work. There's only actually 80 or 90, and there's 10 more people or so on the payroll. getting paid, and he's getting or she's getting some money somewhere along the line, you know, as a result of doing that, of committing that fraud. And however, if that company, you know, is in that country is doing really well, it's difficult to, you know, to go to that individual and have any kind of discussion about whether or not that might be happening for, I guess, very obvious reasons. But what you can do is you can say to the whole company, we're centralizing our payroll. These are the reasons why: efficiency, compliance, control, all that good stuff. So we're going to do it for you now. And therefore you can prevent fraud, or you can you know, have fraud disappear over an implementation period and have that headcount settle down to the right level. And we've seen, you know, I've heard stories of where that's exactly happened, and no one's asked any questions about those 5 or 10 employees that shouldn't have been there, that aren't there anymore, because the guy's delivering double revenues every year and everything's going well, but you've taken the problem away rather than created a difficult situation, which might be quite hard to resolve based on the labor laws of employment contracts for that individual, him or herself, and so on and so forth. So those are where, you know, the horror stories I've heard at dinner have come out around, really. And they're really difficult to quantify that, really difficult to build that into your business case if you want to do a global payroll project and undertake this consolidation. But I think, you know, it's a real issue. In the bigger the company, the more real that issue ultimately is, just because of scale.
Do you see a future where finance owns payroll rather than HR?
I see it's a reality today in a good number of our customers. You know, we tend to find it's one or the other, and increasingly I'd say the trend is towards finance. And I think there's you know, the drivers for that are the same drivers that drive companies to want to, you know, to work with a company like ours. You know, the real value of consolidating your payroll is really financial. It's about controlling and reducing risk. It's about getting greater control. It's about spending less money on you know, processing your payroll. They're all financial drivers. And obviously it's about ultimately moving money around you know, from yourself as a company into your employees' bank accounts, largely or through other mechanisms of getting them paid, and that's money, and therefore finance has always had a role, of course, that's obvious. But given the benefits that you can gain through taking a more holistic approach to managing your payroll at the global level, we see it moving across to finance. You know, the vice president of global payroll in one of our largest customers, you know, he reports to the senior vice president of shared service, and that individual reports to the CFO, and that is increasingly common. The HR involved, of course, is certainly involved in the process of undertaking the change for obvious reasons. They're better than most of change management in the organization because it involves people, and they are the custodians of people and strategy, of course. So they're always involved, but increasingly you see HR is taking responsibility for payroll when it gets managed at the global level.
So you have some wonderful partners, and so I want to ask especially from a global payroll perspective, what should it be tied to? What else in the organization should payroll be informing and touching from a data and a, you know, integration perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious, you know, base point is you have to integrate it with your system of record. You know, we're a downstream system. We take information from other systems, such as Workday and the other systems of record, both old and new, that exist in enterprises, you know, today. But I think the interesting area is what happens beyond that. You know, the way that our integration works, our integrations work across many vendors now, is that we're returning data to other systems. Increasingly, we're playing a role, as many vendors are, of course, in contributing data to various big data-related initiatives to get greater insight into the organization as a whole. And I think there's a lot to be gained from unifying your approach to payroll from a data model perspective, so that you can begin to compare, you know, across countries that you're operating in, what the trends are, and rather than just treating payroll as a you know, something that needs to get done, which clearly, obviously, it has to be. You can also treat it as a source of intelligence inside the organization to complement many other sources of intelligence to help you manage your business better. You know, one of our customers, you know, once said to me, when I asked them why they're doing this, you know, why they're choosing to integrate their payroll on a single platform across all of their countries, the answer they gave was, well, you know, we're not sufficiently in control. I don't know how many people, you know, in China we pay until it's been done by our outsourcer over there and reported back to us. And therefore, we're getting our people paid on time, but we're not sufficiently in control of the process. And, you know, there's a Sarbanes-Oxley issue to that, and there is a variation issue, by which I mean if the variations are negative, we spend a little bit more in every country around the world than our plans say that we should, then, you know, we miss our numbers, and we're a public company, and we all know where that leads. And so control is our fundamental driver for doing this. But you know what? Once we've got control, we're going to be able to see it all, and I'm going to be able to compare between countries, you know, what the changes are, because our headcount planning mechanisms tend to be quite, you know, line of business driven. We have new manufacturing operation over here. We need an office over there. And what are the rates of salary in that area? That's right. We probably do a pretty good job of making those decisions in piecemeal separately, you know, but we don't look at them together, and we don't compare them at the global level to understand what's really going on in our business. And once we have all this data in a single platform and a single set of reports, we're going to be able to do that. And they're there now, and I think they're learning a lot of insight as to, you know, how to contribute to the strategic planning of the business through having that data available to them. And you can only do that, you know, if you consolidate it at least at the data model level, and in their case, they've gone ahead and done it, you know, at the processing level too.
So I need to ask you an implementation question, and I want to kind of right-size our mentality on how quick or how long things and change should happen. So take us through kind of what a scenario looks like for, pick a company, you know, size and countries and things like that, but just give us an idea of what should our expectations be?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, we signed a deal with a global, well-known consumer company, internet consumer company that everybody will be familiar with. 48 countries, 9,000 people, and that'll take about a year to roll through, maybe 15 months from agreeing to consolidate their payroll and work with us across their entire populations to actually having everything live and getting that unified solution and ultimately getting those common intelligence and reporting mechanisms I was just talking about in place and therefore able to be used. And now the reason it takes a year is twofold. One, you know, when you've got 48 countries, you know, just common sense tells you don't need PRINCE2 qualification to figure out you shouldn't do that in 2 months, right? It's just too much work, too much risk, too much change all at one go. So you have to have a cadence, you know, which allows you to complete that in a more orderly mechanism, because at the end of the day, it is payroll, it is mission critical, and it has to be done correctly. But the second reason is a little bit more prosaic, and that is that with the best will in the world, no procurement organization has lined up their end dates with either the software that they're using, they're going to stop using if they're doing it internally, or the current country-by-country outsource arrangement they have with whoever it is in each country. All those things tend to end on a different month, and really what happens in the real world is we sign up a deal, we figure out what all those end dates are, and then we wrap our project around like an annual cadence to merge with those end dates so that they're not paying a vendor for two or three months in a crossover period. And that's really the reality of how these projects get done. So they do take a year. You don't want to take 3 years over it. I've seen some people do it because you get into project fatigue and things slow down and everyone gets tired. And you shouldn't do it in 2 months because, you know, it's just not feasible and it's too much risk. We have done it, I might add, in 2 months. And that's for a company that was divesting from another company, and they just have to have it done. And it was painful, but we got it done.
Yeah. So you can move fast, but there's a logical, a kind of a methodical way of moving slow and making sure the change is done correctly.
I wouldn't say it's slow. You move at the right pace, and you get it done in the right time frame that works for your business to ensure continuity of payroll processing, which clearly is the route. You have to ensure that. That's what their job is.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. You can't mess up payroll. So one thing in HR we can't mess up. We can mess up a lot of things.
Exactly.
Can't mess up payroll. Listen, we're out of time. As always, our calls go really quickly. Wonderful talking with you. Everyone, please give the CloudPay website a once-over. And at the same time, if you need global payroll, make sure to reach out to Andrew and his team. Wonderful company. Andrew, thanks for coming on the show. And thanks again for everyone listening to Drive Through HR. And we're out. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.